Good morning.
Good morning.
We have made it. The last sermon on Judges. Bet y'all didn't think we were ever going to get there, did you? We have traveled through a tough book. One that we have seen mankind at its worst. Mankind at its finest. God's frustration with this people throughout the stories, God raising judges up to bring his people back into some semblance of relationship. His people not paying attention and going right back to what they previously had become and what they previously had participated in. I think is, just from my own perspective, I think the biggest takeaways that I've had through this study of the book of Judges is just how relatable it is to society today. We don't necessarily always see front page news about a young girl driving a tent spiked through the head of someone. We don't often see pillars being pushed down to kill a mob of Philistines. But we have seen and we have bore witness in today's society to the destruction of man, haven't we? To just how evil we can be if we're left to our own devices. It's sad. It's scary. There's been a phrase that we've talked about throughout the book of Judges that we're going to conclude with, and it's the very last line in chapter 21 of the book of Judges. We have no king. And they did what was right in their own eyes. If that's not a depiction necessarily of today's society, then I'm not sure what is. But as we conclude, as we 2 weeks ago we talked about chapter. I'm sorry, I'm not used to front row. I'm going to back up, y'all. I don't want you guys thinking I'm going to let you fall asleep. Now that you're on front row, I'm going to be looking at you. But we looked at chapter 20 of Judges and how it was a response. And I hope and pray that y'all have read read through some of this. I know some of y'all have. But I hope and pray that you've read through some of this through the book of Judges and even the difficulty in reading some of it. But in chapter 19, we see this Levite. And he goes to get his concubine back from her father's house. And on their way back, she basically gets molested, raped, and he takes her body, divides it up, and sends it out in FedEx, right? Well, they didn't have FedEx then, it was UPS, to all the regions of Israel. And it unified the people of Israel because I think they came face to face. And I think sometimes that's what it takes. You can look through Scripture, you can look through your own lives. The times you've come face to face with just how far off the path you've gotten, those are lonely times, aren't they? Think about the prodigal son. Everything's gone. He's eating with the pigs. And the only voice that he can still hear is the father's voice. That's it. All the other voices are gone. We have experienced times in our life where we have hit rock bottom. And when we hit rock bottom, there is still a voice that's there. Our society has deemed, and we see it over and over, see it in young people's lives, it breaks my heart, that when they hit that place of rock bottom, that place of insecurity, that place of uncertainty, it seems far better to remove their existence from this life than to find themselves a savior. And as we have studied through the book of Judges and we've watched Israel on the roller coaster of life have peaks and hit rock bottom and pull themselves out, we come face to face with chapter 20 where the people of Israel have been unified for the first time in a long time. They have been unified and their unity is surrounded by this evil atrocity that has happened amongst their people. And it's devastating. And they're like, what in the world? We have to act. And I told you guys 2 weeks ago, when I thought about that story about how Israel came together and heard the story of the Levite man and were unified that something must be done, my brain went right to 9/11 and how that event in our history changed the course of a lot of lives momentarily. It unified a country that hadn't been unified very well. It brought people together. And we're, let's see, 20 years, right? We're 20 years removed from that event. And we praised first responders and police and law enforcement and firefighters for rushing in, knowing that the reality was they probably weren't coming back out. To now we have a time in our society that they're the villain in 20 short years. Because, see, bad things that happen in life, they might unify, but they're only going to unify us for a minute. They're only going to unify us for a moment. They're only going to unify us as long as we have the same goal in mind. At the end of 9/11, everybody in this nation's goal was against the terrorists. But once that started dissipating, we remembered and we realized what all our differences were and why we didn't like this person or this group of people. And all of a sudden we became dysfunctional again as a nation and as a society. This is the path that Israel's been on throughout the entire book of Judges. Is they've been unified, they've been split, they've been divided. And this one event brings them face to face with just how bad it's gotten. They decide to act. They decide to make a stand. But they didn't really invite God into that. And we saw through chapter 20 how they went and destroyed, virtually destroyed into non-existence the tribe of Benjamin. They wiped them out for this atrocity. But now they've got a little bit of conflict on their hands. And that's what we're going to see in the last book, or last chapter of the book of Judges. So in chapter 21, starting in verse 1, it says, "Now the men of Israel had sworn at Mizpah, no one of us shall give his daughter in marriage to Benjamin." So they had made an oath, they had made a promise, that none of us are going to give our daughters to the tribe of Benjamin, period. We're not going to do that. I can remember back several months ago when we talked about another judge named, I think it was Jephthah, that made an oath that the first thing that walks out of his house after he had won a battle, he would offer up to the Lord. Guess what it was? It's his daughter. And the travesty of that is, we make promises. Anybody in here say, "God, if you just get me out of this jam, I'll do something different next time"? If you're not raising your hand, you're lying right now. All right? Because the reality is, we've all done that. Maybe not as adults, even though probably we still have as adults. If you'll take this from me, if you'll remove this from me, if you'll get me out of this spot, whatever it is, whether it's health concerns, whether it's a problem with a child, whether it's a report card that you really don't want to show mom and dad, whatever the case may be, we have made those promises. Those promises, "God, if you'll just do this, I'll do this." God doesn't need that. God doesn't need that. He doesn't need your oaths. He doesn't need your promises. What he needs is your faithfulness. And we see here that Israel has made a promise, an oath, that they will not share their daughters with the tribe of Benjamin. But now there's a conflict because Benjamin has been wiped out with the exception of 600 people. 600 men have escaped the wrath of their brothers and sisters, of their tribesmen, of their nation. And all of a sudden there comes a realization, well, we kind of need 12 tribes. What are we going to do? How are we going to allow or help now the tribe of Benjamin not drift off into non-existence? Because we have already said they can't have our daughters. Isn't it interesting to you how man has figured out a way, I'm trying to think how to say this, I kind of talked about it a little bit this morning in class, to manipulate a situation? You know, did you ever make a promise to someone when you were, let's say, 6, 7 years old? Some of you younger people, maybe it's a little more fresh in your memory. Some of you older people, I'm going to tell you right now, you did this, all right? So just know you did it. But you made a commitment, made a promise. Maybe it's to mom or dad. Maybe it's just to a friend. But you did this behind your back. Because it was your escape path. In case this doesn't go right, in case that promise isn't upheld, I can always say, well, I have my fingers crossed. I have my fingers crossed. And that's what we do so often in times in our life with sin, is we say, well, we had our fingers crossed. And so what you're going to see transpire throughout the chapter 21 of Judges is Israel finds some workarounds from their oath. We're going to find a path to save the tribe of Benjamin, even though we made this oath that they weren't going to get our daughter. So let's see how they did that. Sorry, I'm not forgetting about you all. Verse 3, and it says, they said, oh Lord, the God of Israel, why has this happened in Israel, that today there should be one tribe lacking in Israel? Really? You going to ask that question? How'd this happen, God? I have a few ideas. And it started with you. Verse 4, and the next day the people rose early and built there an altar and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. And the people of Israel said, which of all the tribes of Israel did not come up to the assembly of the Lord? So I got a plan. For they had taken a great oath concerning him who did not come up to the Lord to Mizpah, saying, he shall surely be put to death. And the people of Israel had compassion for Benjamin, their brother, and they said, one tribe is cut off from Israel this day. What shall we do for wives for those who are left, since they have sworn by the Lord that they will not give them any of our that we will not give them any of our daughters for wives? And they said, what one is there of the tribes of Israel that did not come up to Mizpah to the Lord to come up to the Lord to Mizpah, and behold, no one had come to the camp from Jabesh Gilead to the assembly. For when the people were mustered, behold, not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead was there. Oh, we found a workaround. There was some of us who weren't present when the oath was made. So we found a way around this. But we also made another oath that if you didn't come up, if you didn't represent your tribe, that you were going to be punished. So now we're going to kill two birds with one stone. We're going to punish these people, but in the process of punishing these people because they didn't come up, we're going to find Benjamin some wives because they also didn't participate in the oath. Y'all see how the human mind works? Y'all see how they have figured out a way to circumvent the oath that they've made? Because what they're going to do now is shed more blood. They're going to punish more of their own people for the sanctity of the tribe of Benjamin. So the congregation sent 12,000 of their bravest men there and commanded them, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead with the edge of the sword. Also the women and the little ones. This is what you shall do. Every male and every woman that has lain with a male, you shall devote to destruction. And they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man by lying with him. And they brought them to the camp at Shiloh, which was in the land of Canaan. So we've got 600 people, 600 men who are still alive from the tribe of Benjamin. And now we have found 400 wives. I don't know. Is it like a lottery draw? I'm not sure how that works. But we got 200 guys that hadn't found wives yet. And so what I want you to see is they have predetermined in their mind, we're going to do this. We're going to accomplish this. And we're going to take our path to accomplish this. So we're going to wipe out another group of people. We're going to take just the virgin women, and we're going to bring them back so that they can be paired with the men from Benjamin. Let's think about for just a nanosecond who's left in the tribe of Benjamin. There's 600. And they're all deserters. They're all people that when the fight broke out, they ran. So we're going to rebuild a tribe of people with 600 cowards. 600 of our least finest folks is what we're going to rebuild a tribe with. But Israel finds themselves in another conflict. We still have 200 that don't have wives. The oath was, how many of you kids have ever done this? Well, I really didn't, well, I shouldn't say kids. How many of y'all adults do this? Well, I really didn't say, Hunter was really good at that. I've got Hunter's mother-in-law here this morning. She's going to learn some things about Hunter today that she never knew. He's still a good kid most of the time. And but how many of y'all have said, told your parent, well, I really didn't say that. What I said was this. I didn't really use that verbiage. What I said was that, I mean, Hunter, he was professional at that. I mean, he had us looped in circles and tied in knots before we knew what happened. How many of y'all have said, that wasn't my exact verbiage, and let me show you what I meant by what I said. Sound like a politician to you? Maybe. So we have a problem. There's conflict still. There's still 200 men without wives, and the Israel is trying to help the tribe of Benjamin survive. And so the whole congregation sent word to the people of Benjamin, verse 13, who were at the Rock of Ramon, and proclaimed peace to them. And Benjamin returned at that time, and they gave them the women whom they had saved. But it wasn't enough. Verse 15, and the people had compassion on Benjamin because the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. Then the elders of the congregation said, what shall we do for wives for those who are left, since the women are destroyed out of Benjamin? And they said, there must be an inheritance for the survivors of Benjamin, that a tribe not be blotted out from Israel. Yet we cannot give them our wives for daughters, for the people of Israel had sworn, cursed be he who gives a wife to Benjamin. So they said, behold, hey, got another idea. Got to work around here. So behold, there's a yearly feast of the Lord at Shiloh, which is north of Bethel, on the east of the highway that goes up from Bethel to Shechem. And they commanded the people of Benjamin, saying, go and lie. Now, I want you to hear this. This is the plan, all right? How many of y'all have come up with some pretty crazy plans? Chloe and I. We've come up with crazy plans. So, all right, we've got all the smart people in a room together, and here's the plan. We want you, during this time of celebration, we want you 200 left that don't have wives. We want you to go hide in the bushes. Okay? We want you to go hide in the bushes and lie in wait. And why in the world would they encourage them to hide in the bushes and lie in wait? Verse 20, and they commanded the people of Benjamin, saying, go and lie in ambush in the vineyards and watch. If the daughters of Shiloh come out to dance in the dances, they come out of the vineyards, snatch each man his wife from the daughters of Shiloh, and go to the land of Benjamin. And there their fathers or their brothers come to and when their fathers or brothers come to complain to us, we will say to them, grant them graciously to us, because we did not take for each man of them his wife in battle. Neither did you give to them, else you would now be guilty. I want you to hear that last verse. Okay. The oath that we took, I need you to hear this, because this is almost comical, all right? Because I find that I've done this, and it's so relatable. All right, God, the oath I took was that I would not give my daughter to anyone in the tribe of Benjamin, but she could be stolen. Think about that for a second. But she could be taken captive. Then I would be spared because I kept my oath. I didn't give my daughter to the tribe of Benjamin. I just let them steal her. How silly does that sound? How silly is our workarounds? Where we found this little gray area that we like living in. It's interesting to me how good we are at living in the gray area. When the reality is, there isn't one. See, the color gray comes from the mixture of what? Black and white. Right? Does God see gray? I don't find it in Scripture. How about y'all? Does he say anywhere in Scripture, hey, listen, if you don't like Jesus, there's a couple other ways? No. It's black and white. It's black and white. There isn't a gray area. I can remember as a younger person being elk hunting on Mount Taylor. Grew up in Grants, New Mexico. Mount Taylor was a great place to elk hunt. Muzzleloader, you know, primitive weapon. And we used to hunt in an area called the checkerboard. And up against the bordering of this area, there's a fence. I was going to say chain link. Woo, people around here are going to think I'm city folk. Barbed wire fence, all right? And that barbed wire fence, on the other side of that barbed wire fence, is Floyd Lee Ranch. Humongous ranch. $7,000 to go hunt on this ranch. And this was back, you know, when dinosaurs walked the earth. So there's a lot of money. And so I'm hunting on public ground that borders Floyd Lee Ranch. And I had spent a lot of time up there. When you spend time somewhere, especially for me in the woods sitting, man, you have a lot of time to think, don't you? You just have a lot of time to reflect and think. And I can remember, I think Lana and I were married, I think. Kyle probably wasn't born yet, I think. No, we may not even been married. That was a long time ago. And I can remember sitting probably a quarter mile off of that fence. And I had spent, you know, as a three-mile hike up in there, and I hiked in there in the dark. I wanted to get up there good and early. Monty, this is when I could hike. And I hiked in there, and I got about a quarter mile off that fence into an area I knew well and sat down. Had to spend about 30 minutes sitting there before it got light enough to see. But as it started getting light enough to see, I could see the fence. About 20 minutes later, I started hearing muzzleloaders fire off, different people shooting at different animals. I sat there that morning, didn't get a shot, but I sat there that morning and watched no less than 400 elk cross that fence after the shots started being fired. Crossing that fence to safety. And I thought to myself in that moment when I was young, I still remember some of my old memories. That's how we live our lives. Close to the fence. Where if there's danger, we can jump back over. I'm going to live my life how I choose to live my life. Do the things that I choose to do. Make the decisions that I want to make. And when things get tough, I'm just going to jump back over the fence on God's side. There's no fence. There's no fence. Do you know the same God that we just sang songs about this morning? The same God that you pray to possibly and hopefully every day? The same God that you are in the quiet of your home and open the Word that it's talking about? Do you know that God is the same God in here as He is out there? Do you know that His expectations of you in here are no different than they are out there? Then why are we not living like that? Why are we not living like the expectations of God are the same for each of us, and it doesn't really matter where we sit geographically? We've got some visitors here this morning from Wisconsin. God's not different there. Same guy. It's the same God. Same salvation. Same desire that none shall perish. Geographically, it doesn't matter. And so we find these little nuances that we can get out of what we promised we would do. And God's just sitting there going, really? I mean, think about the path that Israel took. They wiped out the tribe of Benjamin because of the evil. And I want you to understand, there is evil going on during this period of time throughout the entire nation of Israel. It just wasn't as bad as that evil. So they found like they're going to be the law keepers all of a sudden, and call out this negative evil, this bad, unbelievable evil, and they're going to invoke their own justice on this evil. And now that they've done that, they realize that their plan wasn't that good because they've almost wiped out an entire tribe, and they can't do that because the tribe of Benjamin needs an inheritance. So now what are we going to do? Well, let's go wipe this group out and save their women so we can give them to the tribe of Benjamin. Well, that worked, but not as good as we had hoped, because there was only 400. And so now what are we going to do? Well, we can't give our daughters, but they can steal them. So why don't we do that? Do you see where man's plans go? Do you see how twisted we have to get? It's crazy, isn't it? But we're kind of, sorry, I keep forgetting about y'all. We keep doing the same things over and over. Seemed like last time I checked, that's the definition of chaos. Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. But yet, in our own existence, in our own being, we're chasing the chaos of life. And God is not a God of disorder, but of order. And the people of Israel, verse 24, departed from there at that time, every man to his tribe and family, and they went out from there, every man to his inheritance. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. We talked this morning a little bit about morality and how there are different influences to morality. I've mentioned this, it's been a few years, probably 3 or 4 years. There's a gentleman that I buy cars from in Las Vegas, Nevada. I buy and sell cars to him. When I'm there, if he's there, he lives in California but comes down to Vegas. When I'm there and he's there, we oftentimes will go out and eat a meal together. Some are a little bit surprised by this relationship that I have with Bassett. Because Bassett's from Pakistan. Bassett's faith is way different than mine. On one of those occasions that we're eating at this Pakistani restaurant in Las Vegas, me and Bassett and his nephew Hamza, we're eating this meal, and I've eaten at this place probably a dozen times over the last 5 years, and I still don't know what I'm eating 100%. They say it's chicken. No, I'm just going to trust them on that, but I've never ordered anything there. I walk in, Bassett knows the owner of this place, they take us to a back room, and then they just start throwing food out on the table. And it's family style. You eat till you're full, and Bassett won't ever let me pick up the check. But there's just food everywhere. There's chicken, I think, beef, I think, some vegetables, I'm pretty sure. And it's really good. I like it. Lana's not a fan. She's eaten there with us before. But one particular day, we ate our fill, and there's still just lots of food out, you know. And I'm like, who does the ordering? I mean, how? There's just food still everywhere. And Hamza, the nephew, asked the guy, said, "Hey, give me some takeout boxes." And I was like, "Oh, good. You know, they're going to take it home." So Bassett and I kind of follow him up outside. He and I are talking, and I'm looking around. I'm like, "Hey, where'd Hamza go?" "Oh, he's looking for a homeless person to give that food to." I was like, "Really?" He said, "Oh, yeah, we do that every time." It's like, really? Huh. If goodness of mankind will be our judge, there's a lot of good people out there. But it is not our guide. If you think goodness is your guide, you're in trouble. If you think your goodness is your salvation, you're in trouble. Because I know people that don't believe in Jesus Christ that are way better than I am. That are way more thoughtful than I am. Because I can't think of a single time in my life I've ever eaten at a restaurant, had leftovers, boxed it up, and took it to somebody that didn't have anything. How about you? If goodness is your guide, you're going to be disappointed. If your morality is your guide, you're going to be disappointed. The last verse of Judges 21 is, there was no king, and they did what was right in their own eyes. There's a lot of people in society today, there's a lot of people in here today, that doing what is right in your eyes is right most of the time. But it's not right all the time. Chapter 2, and Joe mentioned it this morning as well. Chapter 2 of Hebrews and verse 1 says, pay attention. Pay attention, because you're going to drift. I know this about mankind. When you don't pay attention, you drift. It's a given. I've been in the woods before and got on an elk and start chasing them, and mile after mile goes by and it finally gets away, and then I look up and I go, I don't really know where I'm at. Other than in the woods. There's an outdoorsman named Ben Lilly. Wrote a book. Somebody asked Ben Lilly, have you ever been lost? He said, never been lost in my life, but I've been mighty concerned a time or two. And I think that's kind of how we function in life. We're just going to walk around half lost and being awfully concerned when you probably have a GPS in your pocket. Doing what's right in your eyes is going to look a lot different in mankind. And you may look better than half the world out there, but it's still not enough. Without Christ, there is no telling where we would be as a society. There's no telling where we would be and what evils would take place. Because with Christ, there are people that do evil things. We do evil things because of the first line. We don't recognize we have a king. This morning, I want y'all to understand that if there's one lesson, one takeaway through the entire book of Judges, it's that one line. We have no king. Which translates into, let me translate that out for you. We have no direction. You have a king. His name is Jesus Christ. Are you following his direction? Because we have a king. Israel, during this period of time, had a king, and they didn't follow him. So just the awareness that there is one doesn't make you follow him. Just because everyone in this room is aware of who Jesus is and what he did for us doesn't mean you're going to be a follower. Doesn't mean you're going to be a disciple of Christ. You don't do what is right in your own eyes if you're following the direction of the king. Because what you do then is what is right in his eyes, not in your own. From the very beginning of time, as man has done what is right in his own eyes, sin has been there. It was Eve that started it. I was talking to a friend of ours, Lance. And he said, I tell people, his wife's a sweetheart. He said, I tell people, if I was Adam and Bicky was Eve, he said, that whole story would have to be rewritten because I'd have been the one eating the fruit. When we do what is right in our own eyes, what we are saying by our actions is, I don't have a king. I'm my own king. And I'll live how I see fit. I hope you have enjoyed the study of Judges. It has been a true blessing for me because honestly, I've never spent much time in there. Past when I was that big and learning about Samson and then some of those guys that were cool stories to read when you're 8 years old. But there's so much more in throughout the book of Judges that I think we need to understand and know so that we don't make the same mistakes that they made. But if this morning, if you are living your life and you don't have a king, you're subject to the evil and the corruption that we've read about for months. If you don't have a king, I encourage you to get a king. And let me encourage you to make that Jesus Christ. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, I ask that you come as Monty leads us in an invitation song.